Welcome to Wear It Down, the Queer Killing Eve podcast. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Natalia. We're two queer women who are obsessed with Killing Eve.
Each episode, we go scene by scene and discuss Villain Eve, the best kills, and the queerest moments.
Fair warning, even though today we're only focusing on one episode, there might be spoilers ahead for seasons 1, 2, and 3. Before we begin, we would like to thank everyone who took the time to listen to our first episode, followed us on social media, and sent us emails answering our burning questions. Special shout out to Sophia, who wrote in and said, I just want to point out that in episode 1, when Villanelle entered her apartment for the first time, she took off a chest binder, which then answers your heroine Polish girl flat-chested statement. And another special shout out to the listener who sent us photo evidence of this scene.
Yeah, and going back to Victor Kedren, it makes you wonder if Villanelle decided to bind her chest in an attempt to go more unseen, given the fact that he was a misogynist and someone who would not have viewed a woman as a passing threat.
I agree. Thank you again to all of our listeners.
Yes, thank you.
Now, on with the show. So this week we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 2, I'll Deal With Him Later, which was written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the great, and directed by Harry Bradbeer. This episode originally aired April 15th, 2018.
What would your synopsis be for this episode?
My synopsis would be, things get gayer.
Ooh, things get more intense. I like it. Yes.
Do you want to hear the Fandom Wiki synopsis for this episode?
Absolutely.
Alright, so it says, in the aftermath of her recent assignment, Villanelle is ordered to take a break. Never one to do as she's told, she goes ahead with her next mission regardless. Meanwhile, Eve is given a dream opportunity to join a secret MI6 unit tracking Villanelle and the shady organization she works for.
Ooh, like that synopsis.
I wonder what this organization is called.
Alright, so our episode opens up with a bang. We have a high energy
literally
song.
Literally a bang.
Yes, it opens up with a high energy song by Unloved called This Is The Time. And the lyrics that we hear over is, this is the time to give you a reason. This is the time to bare my soul. And we have the big letters that say Bulgaria. It's nighttime.
Yeah, so we opened up. There's a building. Then we see a lady on a bus listening to music and looking out the window. And she sees that building. She sees a man kind of panicking on the window with bloody hands. And Villanelle, just super calm in comparison and looking fucking amazing, just slowly walking towards him.
Yeah, she's almost like sauntering.
Oh, it's so good.
It is.
So the lady on the bus, she sees this, she pulls out her phone, and, you know, we hope that she's gonna call the police or something, because she clearly sees what's happening in the building, but instead she calls her mom.
And what does she say? She's like, hey mom, do you need anything from the store?
Yeah, which, to me, it always shocks me. It's a funny scene, but it's also a really scary scene to me.
Yeah, it's that passive bystander, like, I'm okay that someone is being killed in a building.
Yeah, Villanelle clearly is a psychopath and she's an assassin, but anyone can directly or indirectly be the cause of someone else's death or murder.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, just because you're not a psychopath does not mean you're a good person.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way to put it and is a shock to the reality.
Yeah.
I like that.
So anyway, the scene moves into the office building and we see the man kind of wobbling away from Villanelle, who is still super calm but just getting slightly more annoyed.
Yeah, you can kind of feel it mounting. She's been beating the crap out of him. But yeah. She looks fine. No blood on her. He hasn't even probably landed a single swing.
Can we talk about what she looks like?
Oh, yes. She looks so good. This is probably one of the best outfits.
I 100% agree. She has the little braids. She has the bomber jacket.
Oh my God, she looks so good.
She looks so good.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best outfits. Because obviously she's on a mission. We know from context of the last episode and the Bulgaria postcard that she got. And now she is in Bulgaria doing this kill. But we don't really understand what her persona is. At least I don't. And I don't think we ever get that from context in this opening.
Yeah.
I do like that she feels very much like a predator going after her prey. And there's this really interesting moment where he ducks behind the desk and he's going like left and right and she's mirroring him on the other side with like that partition between the desk. It feels very much so like a cat going after a mouse and like playing with it. And her facial expressions aren't super playful necessarily, but her body language conveys so much.
I agree. It seems like she's playing with her food, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a really funny way to put it.
Obviously, she's not a cannibal, but we hope.
Oh, God. I hope
she can eat me any day, am I right?
Oh, my God.
Anyway. Anyway, I digress. So the man is begging for his life. He says, like, I have a family, I have children, I have money, I'll give you whatever you want. And she just says, I want you to stay still.
Yeah, he's like, what do you want?
She's obviously getting more and more annoyed. She's like, I'm just trying to kill you, dude.
Yeah, she seems impatient.
Yeah, and that's a good word, impatient.
Yeah.
And so he throws a phone at her face.
So rude. And I think what's really funny is the little, like, groan she does, because it obviously hurt. Like, it sounds like it slammed into her face. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, whips out her gun and just shoots. It almost looks like her eyes are closed, so she's not really aiming at him.
It's so good, though. It's something about it, so sexy.
Yes. I really like the weapon choice for this episode, because last episode we had the hairpin, and this time we have the gun, which, given the quickness of this kill, I feel like it matches. It's very blunt, to the point, and I really like the weapon this episode.
I also like that she didn't use a silencer on the gun.
Yeah, it's a small detail, but I think it's a really important one, because though no one is in the building, she doesn't care.
And she also doesn't care that the windows are, like, wide open.
Yeah.
And clearly people can see them.
But kind of knowing that it doesn't matter. Yeah. No one's gonna do anything.
So after she kind of shoots at him with her eyes closed, he kind of cowers and is kind of lying down in the fetal position, just sobbing. And he asks, who are you? And she says, huge question.
I love the line. I love how well she delivers it too, because it's like, huge question.
And I think it's really interesting, because that is a huge question. You're like, who is she? And does she even know who she is? Because it doesn't really matter who she is. You know, like, she's just kind of the messenger. Like, she's just there to do this one job. It's really about who sent her, right? But for her, it is a huge question, because, one, I think she's super self-absorbed and egocentric, and she really does come to mind sort of like, I'm a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
You know? And then also, her identity is something that eludes her. And so the question of, like, who am I is a huge question for her.
Yeah, and she's not going to sit with this man and be like, I'm about to kill you, but yeah, let me talk about my identity, who I am, what I'm doing. We have seen her do that before to some extent. Like when she tells the little boy in the first episode, like, or I'll kill you too. But she doesn't do that with him. And I think it's partially because she's annoyed and impatient with him.
I agree.
I really like the line too that follows, which is where he asks, why are you doing this? And she just cocks her head and lifts her eyebrow, and she's like, I have no idea. And you can hear the silent, like, and I don't care.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think, imagine that you're about to die and the person that's killing you is like, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm doing it. It makes you feel like your life really does not matter.
It really doesn't to her. I think that's also really sad, because this man is not being killed with someone who passionately wants to see him die.
Like, yeah.
It's even someone who's so unattached to everything.
Yeah. So, like, indifferent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want someone to kill me with passion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she really doesn't care. She's more than anything annoyed. I really saw this as, like, her, the equivalent of, like, her trying to kill a fly.
Yeah, you know, that's a great comparison. Yeah.
Thank you. Like, just very annoyed, just wants it to stand still, doesn't, like, humanize it at all, even though he tries to humanize himself in her eyes, being like, I have a family, I have kids. She's like, at the end of the day, you're a fly, and I'm gonna, like, splatter your ass, you know?
Yeah. All right, and then we see her point the gun at his face, and, you know, she does shoot him 2 times in the chest, and we watch the life drain from his eyes, which is... it's a really cold death, I think, given what we've seen thus far.
And after she does that, she kind of sighs, like, finally I killed him. But then she rolls her eyes, and then she kind of sits on a chair, right? Like, just looking gay as fuck. But she just gives, like, this really bored sigh, right?
Yeah, like, the joy of this kill does not last nearly as long as, I feel like, the last one, which had a lot more prepped, a lot more, like, high stakes. But I feel like this one, it was just more clear, cut, dry, very blunt, kind of like the gun she uses. It's just wham, bam, done. And I feel like the high of it is so brief. Like, we see a moment of peace before she does sit down, but I feel like it fades so quickly into boredom.
Yeah.
I think I really want to talk about the location, not just Bulgaria, really, but the location of this kill being in an office building, in an office space, because if you juxtapose it to Villanelle's job and the job of an office job is generally viewed as something that's very boring and mundane, and then Villanelle's job is this, like, high stakes, covert, stylish, beautifully dressed assassin, but she seems so bored, but it's the most exciting job, you know? It sounds like it would be the most exciting job, but she's not satisfied. And so it makes you wonder what would leave her satisfied, what would make her truly happy, because obviously an office job would probably never fit her.
Not at all.
You see her making copies.
Can you imagine, like Villanelle being your accountant?
Oh, God, no. I mean, she'd be a beautiful one, but she'd be so bored. Yeah. And I think another thing that's really interesting is that this concept or this boredom that she feels is introduced so early on. It's not something that's hinted at episode 4. It's episode 2 at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important that they establish that at the beginning, because she's bored as an assassin.
Yeah. I think it also kind of alludes to the fact that she's probably been doing this for a very long time.
Yeah, definitely. And so next, as she's sitting in this chair in the middle of this, like, brutalist-looking office building, we fade into the song, which is very sad, which in comparison to the beginning was Unloved's song, This Is The Time, and which is so upbeat. Mm-hmm. And then now we fade in, after the kill, to K by Cigarette After Sex, mm-hmm. which is very sad. And I think it reflects her mood really well. Mm-hmm. And then we fade into the title card.
But before we get to the title card, I think...
Oh, yes. All right. Yes, it is time to rank that kill. On Rank That Kill, we break down a villainelle kill and discuss her fashion, persona, weapon of choice, flair, and most importantly, the psychopathy of it all. All right. So let's start with fashion.
Fashion. You know, I'm a slut for this outfit. I love the braids, I love the bomber jacket, the pants, the shoes, mm-hmm. the way she just kind of owns the room, mm-hmm. the fucking building, you know, with this outfit. Oh, I love it, I love it, I love it.
I agree. I think the jacket is what really sells it for B, mm-hmm. and the tight braids. I think it's so good.
It's so good.
What do you rate this fashion?
I give this a 10 out of 10.
Solid. I give this one an 8.2. So next we have persona.
I'm not even sure if she has a persona in this kill, or at least not one that we see, kind of like you mentioned before. She doesn't really change her accent. She doesn't change her language that she uses. She's not really in disguise. So for me, I rated it pretty low. I rated it a 3 out of 10.
Wow.
And I really just gave the 3 just because I really like the bomber jacket.
I think there's a lot of setup to this kill that we don't see. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very hard to rate the persona and how did she get into the building? Why is this specific outfit the one she chose for this kill? I think it complements the weapon and the general atmosphere that we have. But because we don't see that persona and she's not speaking a different language, I also rated this pretty low, so I gave it a 4. Next, my personal favorite, flair. What did you give flair?
Again, a lot of these are influenced by her outfit because I just love it so much.
That's very fair.
But also the fact that she shot him twice, which she didn't need to shoot him twice. Because later on, we know that she shot him in the heart. You mm-hmm. only need to shoot someone in the heart once for them to die. And the fact that, you know, we kind of talked about it before, that it's kind of like this energy that she's playing with her food, like a cat.
Yeah.
So I rated this 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. So when I was considering flair, I actually considered when she's stalking him, very much like a predator, like a panther pacing toward its prey. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I counted this a 6.8. That's what I looked at when I considered flair of it all. So next is weapon of choice.
To me, in and of itself, the gun is not exciting. It's definitely mm-hmm. not as exciting as the hairpin. I do like that she didn't use a silencer. I do agree that it kind of goes with her outfit. But overall, I'm not super impressed with it. I thought it was very simple. So I gave it a 4.5 out of 10.
Wow, that's so low.
Yeah.
I think the gun and the general atmosphere of the kill, I think the gun really fits. It's the first time we see her with a gun. And so that's just real good. It's so good. I actually gave this a 7.
Oh, wow. That's really hot.
Yeah, I really like the gun.
I will say she's really hot with a gun.
She is.
But I don't know. Maybe imagine if we've seen her, like, kill him with, like, a stapler or something.
Oh, that would have been fun. Or, like, the cord of a printer or something. Yeah. That would have been cool. Or a houseplant. I don't know. A water cooler. Oh, God. I don't know how she would do that. And then finally, the psychopathy.
I think this goes back to her energy, especially after she killed him. We do get an insight into her, kind of like we said before, like that she is bored with something that really wouldn't bore a normal person.
Yeah.
I love this, actually, psychopathy-wise.
Yeah.
But I think you get a lot from her in this kill. I actually rated this 10 out of 10.
Wow, that's so high. So I gave this one an 8 because I do feel like it gives us really good insight mm-hmm. into how bored she is with her job. And I think because this is really the only second big kill we've seen, I do feel like they do a good job of fleshing out where she's at mentally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I gave it an 8. So what was your final score?
My overall score was a 6.8.
A 6.8? Mm-hmm. Okay, this was also a 6.8 for me.
Really?
That's really funny. I feel like we scored all over the place.
So on my bye-bye board, this one ranks as number 2. Mm-hmm. With number 1 still being the hairpin.
Yeah, same for me right now.
Yeah. So let us know what y'all think and how y'all would rank this kill.
Yes, please do, because that'll be really fun.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to go on a break?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Awesome, we'll be right back. Hey Maddie, have you signed any Black Lives Matter petitions recently?
Yeah, I have. In fact, we have a link in our episode description where our listeners can also sign petitions in support of Black Lives Matter.
Check it out and follow the link, blacklivesmatters.carrd.co.
Thanks. Alright, and we're back. So next we do fade into the title card, the song K by Cigarette After Sex is still playing. Very soft. Our title card this time has a soft cream background with forest green letters, and the V is dripping, but on the inside this time. Mm. And then we transition to Eve in London.
Yeah, so she's walking down the street. She's going to meet Carolyn at a restaurant. And as she is walking, the song is still playing, and the lyrics are, I remember when I first noticed that you liked me back. We were sitting down in the restaurant waiting for the check. And I think that's a really interesting lyric choice to have over Eve walking to meet Carolyn. Because I think the song kind of talks about that feeling of someone liking you back. It's very exciting, very thrilling. There's this feeling of kind of not knowing what's going to happen next, but being excited about it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of how Eve feels as she's meeting with Carolyn. Because this might be, and it is, a new and exciting opportunity for her. You know, she gets to be that little, like, psycho-loving whore that she really is.
That's a horrible way to say it. I love it.
In the most loving way.
No, I love it. That's beautiful, but also terrifying. You just called Eve a whore.
In a good way.
So yeah, she's running across the street, and I think it's really cute because I don't know if she was in a rush or something, but she's like putting on lipstick as mm-hmm. she goes, and she's checking her reflection in places. Mm-hmm. She's just really cute. She feels very metropolitan as she's running around.
She does.
And then I like the moment when she gets to the cafe and she sees through the window. She sees Carolyn sitting at the table through the window, and Carolyn just weirdly has her eyes closed. But Eve, right before she goes in, she takes a little sigh, like almost like, oh, okay, I can do this. Yeah. And she runs in. I love
it. It's so cute. She comes to Carolyn, who really does look like she's asleep.
Yeah.
Which, relatable.
You fall asleep in cafes with your eyes closed?
All the time. That's where I go for my afternoon naps.
Yes, as you should. And I like that even as Eve, like, gets close to the table, Carolyn is just, like, still eyes closed.
Yeah.
And Eve has to, like, lean in, and she's a little smile on her face, and she's like, Carolyn? Like,
yeah. You know, Carolyn's like, oh, I was just, and Eve is like, oh, I know. And then Carolyn just stares at her for a really awkward time.
Yeah, and there's this weird pause, and then she's like, sit down.
Yeah.
And then once Eve does sit down, she's like clattering into the table, and she knocks it, and she's like, sorry. And it conveys so quickly how nervous she is.
Mm-hmm. It's like she's like at a job interview.
Yeah, she doesn't even realize this really is a job interview. Mm-hmm. I think she's just like, Carolyn Martin wants to have breakfast with me. I wonder what that means. Until she shows up and she's trying to look presentable, but she's so awkward.
And then Carolyn says a line that I really like. It's just a very Carolyn line. She says, I'm not very good at how are you, etc.
Yeah, it's really funny because she's like, I'm just gonna dive right in. But then she says to Eve, she's like, you're from Connecticut, right? And I feel like that's very small talky. Mm-hmm. So that was a really strange transition. But then we have a really awkward Eve moment where she just starts rambling off.
Oh my goodness.
It's so funny.
I do say, we learn about her though. We learn that she was born in England, but she moved to the United States when her parents separated. Mm-hmm. And then she moved back when her dad died. And then she says she married her dad.
Yeah. And then she's like, no, I mean, he's much more physical around the house.
Oh my God. Who says that?
Yeah. And then she's like, I'm a little on edge. And it's like, honey,
know. It's so funny. But then, you know, the married her dad thing makes me think, does she have daddy issues? And then that makes me think, what character on the show has the biggest daddy energy? Villanelle. Ooh.
But also the age difference, but also daddy issues know no bound. Oh, wow. Amazing. And then I love that Carolyn just plows forward. She's mm-hmm. like, I'm just gonna get through this. Like, I don't want to deal with the awkwardness because mm-hmm. I'm Carolyn and I have things to do and I have restaurants to go close my eyes in, you know?
Yeah.
She starts to explain. She was like, this is really awkward because, you know, you got fired. But anytime that anyone is fired, their computer and hard drives are swept. And Eve just looks horrified.
Yeah.
She's like, oh no. Oh no. And then she hands her that padfolio, mm-hmm. and Eve just, like, opens it up and starts sifting through it. And I love the look of relief on her face.
Yeah, what does she say? She says, I thought you were going to pull out all the pictures we took of Frank eating.
Yeah, I really like that because I think it shows, one, the camaraderie mm-hmm. between her and her coworkers, and also the fact that Frank's a loser. And I'm just like, he looks like a rodent of a man. So oh, the fact that he probably eats like a rodent, you know? I think he's so gross.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that Carolyn like plops this really thick folder in front of Eve. And it's essentially like this big dark secret that Eve has, right? This obsession for like female assassins. Mm-hmm. It's literally placed in front of her for her to kind of admit to and explain. And she just laughs about it. Yeah. Like, she doesn't take it seriously, and she doesn't think it's something that should be taken seriously.
Yeah.
But Carolyn realizes Eve's potential and wants to tap it.
Yeah. And I really like it because Carolyn's line of questioning is very straightforward, and I like Eve's answer because Carolyn says, "Did you compile this on your own?" Eve, "Yes." "No one asked you to do it?" Eve, "No." "Has anyone else seen it?" And she was like, "I don't know." Mm-hmm. "No." And then I really like it because Carolyn has a question, which could really be taken two ways, really. She said, "Why did you do this?" Mm. And Eve immediately turns to the waiter that's walking by and is like, "Can I get a gin and tonic?" Mm-hmm. And the waiter like tries to be like, "No, ma'am."
Yeah, he's like, "We don't open the bar in the morning."
Yeah. But then of course, Carolyn, in all of her like power, she turns to him, not even a question like Eve asked, but two gin and tonics.
And he's like, "Yes, madam."
Yeah.
Like, her fucking power, dude.
Yeah, like, notably, the whole cafe or restaurant, whatever, is completely cleared. Mm-hmm. So how did Carolyn arrange that? Mm-hmm. Did she arrange it and make sure that it was completely clear so that they could have that conversation in complete confidence?
Carolyn is not a person you say no to. When she was talking about Eve getting fired, she didn't even say the word fired. Like, it's something that's not in her vocabulary, something that she's never experienced.
Yeah, I don't think she has. And if she has, she does not wear it. I think it's really funny because Eve goes on to explain, she's like, "I studied criminal psychology," mm-hmm. and she explains that, you know, she specifically is fascinated with women who can go on and kill.
Yes.
Not just people, but women specifically.
She makes a point to say women.
Yeah, and then another thing that she goes on to say, she's like, "I'm just a fan."
Yeah.
Which is not a normal thing to say. Who is fucking mm-hmm. out here like, "Yeah, I love to research real life cases and then study them and question, was this a woman? What was her motive? What is she doing?" Like, that's obsessive, and mm-hmm. it's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's like she is struggling to give a reason. She tries to come up with like what are quote unquote normal reasons. Like, mm-hmm. "I study criminal psychology. I'm interested in like, you know, investigating women and what it takes for them to be able to do this. And like, I'm a fan." Like, she can't really put her finger on why she did it because mm-hmm. I don't think she knows. And, you know, I think it's because she wants to be one.
Yeah. There's this kind of desire that she cannot put a name to mm-hmm. or she doesn't want to or realize that she can.
Mm-hmm. And so she's trying to give all these normal reasons, but Carolyn sees right through that bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, does her little hand and she's just say it. What is it really?
Because she asks, she's like, "Why did you compile these specific cases?" Mm-hmm. And that's when we have Eve just rambling. And then we have this famous line, and I am going to say the whole thing because I think it's really important. And it's one that's used in voiceovers and ads all the time. But Eve finally just spits it out, and it's so satisfying. She says, "I believe there is a female assassin operating internationally, and she's targeted a number of influential people. She doesn't have a signature, but she certainly has style. And I don't know who or what is behind her, but I don't think she's slowing down, and that just interested me." I love that she's really firm at the, like, "interest me."
Mm-hmm. But then she ends the sentence with, "I guess."
Yeah.
To kind of, like, invalidate her whole thing, because she feels self-conscious. She feels insecure.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, "That was probably not a normal thing to say. So I'm just gonna add this, I guess, at the end."
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think many people have ever validated her. I think she's mm-hmm. often fought this fight alone.
Yeah.
Because she goes on to say, like, "I'm a crackpot, and, you know, that makes me a conspiracy theory, like, hound or whatever." And she really just deflates herself real mm-hmm. quick.
I agree. And then she goes on to say, "She is outsmarting the smartest of us, and for that, she deserves to do or kill whoever the hell she wants."
Oh, yes, validate her.
Yeah. She says, "I mean, if she's not killing me, then frankly, it's not my job to care anymore."
I love it. I love how fed up Eve mm-hmm. is, and I love the transition because I feel like this is something that she has an authority on, and I think it's also something that she's really angry that she probably can't continue to work on at this point. Mm-hmm. And she's channeling that frustration into that little monologue.
I agree. It's like, you can tell that she is impressed by her.
Yeah.
She's impressed. Like, she low-key admires Villanelle.
Yeah.
And I think this energy is the reason why Eve can never really bring herself to truly hate Villanelle.
Yeah, because she's truly fascinated by her, and she's also deeply impressed, like you said.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's really interesting that she said, "It's not my job to care anymore," because it literally was her job mm-hmm. to care.
Yeah.
And she's like, "I don't have to do it anymore, mm-hmm. and I can just be impressed by her."
Yeah. I like that. I think that's really good. And then, of course, we transition to Carolyn.
But I do think it's really interesting that she says, you know, if she's not killing me, then I don't care. But that if she's not killing me is really interesting, because it's kind of foreshadowing. It can be like, kind of as an audience being like, but will she try to kill you? Or like, are you gonna get like wrapped up in this? Gonna get in danger? Is she gonna like, you know, are you gonna be her next target kind of thing? But I think it also references the title of the show itself. It's Killing Eve. Because she will kill her. Maybe not in the literal sense, but I think in some ways. And maybe, maybe not directly, maybe just her being in her life is gonna end up killing this version of Eve.
I like that a lot. That's a really good line of thought, and I think it's something that we're gonna see over and over come back.
I agree.
And I'm excited to keep exploring that. And then we transition to Carolyn and Eve walking down the street after Carolyn says, can I show you something? And I love it because Eve is just tagging along and she looks so excited and confused. It's almost like, oh, I did a good job. Like, they're letting me go to the back now. Ah, it's so exciting. And then Unloved is playing after dinner and Eve's just looking around. And we have one of the best lines in the whole damn show. Whole damn show.
I think about this all the time.
Oh, I can picture it so vividly.
So, Carolyn's about to open the door to the building, and she stops. She looks, like, to the left near, like, a dumpster or something, and she says, I once saw a rat drink from a can of Coke there. Both hands. Extraordinary. And that's it.
That's the whole
line. That's the line.
And they walk in.
It's so fucking funny.
I think that humor, once again, that observational, mundane, really strange humor is such Phoebe Waller-Bridge writing in its beautiful form. I love it so much. It's one of the best, funniest moments of this entire, like, episode and, dare I say, whole show.
I agree. So I completely agree.
Oh my god. And this is the dingiest place Carolyn has taken Eve. And there's piping all over the place. There's a man just like down the stairs. It's really awkward. And I remember there's a part where Carolyn turns to Eve and she's kind of explaining. She's like, it's kind of a dingy place. Or not the best people are here. Don't worry about it though. She's like, just well, keep going. Let's go. And it's really good. And then we get inside, right? After going through what? 2-3 doors? All the keys and like cards to swipe through. So this is clearly a locked situation. And Eve is looking around, but we don't see what she's seeing yet. It's just a close up of her face and it's slowly zooming in. And Eve looks like a kid that just walked into like a candy store. She's so excited. I love it. I think it's so good.
I agree. And so there's like, you know, some computers, there's a bulletin board. Essentially everything that Eve has been researching on her own is on this wall.
Yeah, and Carolyn like plops down in a chair and it's really funny because she's like, there's no trace, there's no pattern. And she's like, your investigation all over my wall. And then she debriefs very briefly what they've been investigating and that they've been compiling evidence. And Carolyn's like, well, you know, we've been doing this for months, but we need someone to put it all together. And she's like, this is an unofficial, official tap on the shoulder.
I like that line.
I love it too.
And then she says, aren't there more qualified people?
Because once again, she's invalidating herself. Eve's like, I've never risen through the ranks. But Carolyn, she says another wonderful line, which I think is great. She's like, I want you. So short and to the point, but also I think floors us as an audience because I'm like, Carolyn wants you. Like, this is an impressive woman to this point, you know, wants you to lead this investigation.
And Eve again is like, why?
Yeah. And I love Carolyn because she leans back and she's like, because I think your research speaks for itself and you also make insane suggestions. And I really like that. And Eve is really and then, you know, she's like, and you're fired, no one cares what happens next. And he's like, no, thank you. Like, she's like, of course, yes, I'll take it. Like, I love it. And then we have another great line from Eve when she's like surveying the room and looking at all the evidence on the wall. She says, it's like I've walked into the inside of my brain.
Yeah, I love that.
I love it too. Because I really do feel like Eve is truly obsessed with this, and I feel like this is the most exciting thing that's happened to her in a very long time.
I agree. And I think it's interesting, you know, she was so insecure and putting herself down when Carolyn was like, I want you to work for me. She was like, why me? Like, more qualified people, all these things. Part of me probably thinks it's because she is a woman, and she's not used to this. So like you said, rising up in the ranks. And I think it's really powerful that it's another woman bringing her up.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's really good. And I mean, she worked under Bill. We like Bill.
Yeah.
But she also worked under Frank as well.
Yeah.
Who's a horrible man from as far as like we've been introduced thus far. Like, I don't like him. I hate him. And then I really like that it's Carolyn.
I agree.
Great. That's a really great point.
And then we get my baby Kenny.
Oh, Kenny. He's so awkward.
I love him.
He walks in and he's horrified. He's like, people. He's like, what?
I love that he's like, sorry about the smell.
That's a just horrible line. It's it's like, oh, Kenny, don't transport me to think about how gross it smells in here because you're just a boy.
He is such a boy.
He's not a man. He's a boy.
He's a boy, but I love him. He's a baby. I love him too.
And then I like that Carolyn pretty much tells her, like, I need you to lead this team. And Eve's like, you know, we're gonna need people to put this together. Mm-hmm. And Eve's like, people? More than herself and Kenny. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you can have two. And Eve, you can just feel it, like, that, like, excitement of, like, mm-hmm. I get to build a team. I get to lead a team.
That's so exciting.
I love it.
And then it switches to Paris, where we have Villanelle on screen. She's wearing kind of this pink blouse, high-waisted pants. I think another bomber jacket, maybe? And it's really funny because we watched this episode together, right? You and me?
Yes.
And when this happened, I literally heard you heavy breathing next to me as Villanelle came on the screen.
It's such a good outfit. I really like bomber jackets, I've discovered. But also, I love Villanelle.
Yeah, I mean, I love Villanelle and everything.
I can't believe you just called me out for my heavy breathing. First of all, I feel exposed.
I will say, I've seen a lot of people online that don't like this outfit.
Really?
Yeah, and they're kind of happy that it was saved for the hetero nonsense that she's about to partake in.
Oh, you mean the red one?
This one. Because this is kind of when she meets Sebastian for the first time.
Yes. Yes, the hetero nonsense of meeting Sebastian. Okay, got it. Yeah, Sebastian is really strange. I mean, he's very sweet, but he's digging in the trash looking for a remote. And he's trying to be, like, flirty, but he's awkward. Then he sees her face, which, mm-hmm. first of all, how dare he react this way? But also, because she's beautiful, bruises and all. And he's like, I don't know the word. He's like, are you hurt? And she just looks at him and she's like, no. Like, why would you ask? I'm fine. Good day. Like,
I like the way she kind of eyes him. Kind of like, I'll play with you later. Yeah. You know?
She's like, I remember your name. And he's like, I'm Sebastian. And I feel like she very much so hears him, but she also doesn't care. And that's very clear. Mm-hmm.
But she does say, I like your trousers.
Yeah. And he's like, I made them myself.
It's like, who is this boy?
He's a little fashion designer boy. I like him. He's cute. Like, I'm happy he doesn't stick around. But, sorry.
I love him. I'm glad he's dead.
You know what I mean. I need her to go have sweet, tender love time with Eve. So then she goes upstairs and she gets into her apartment and there's Constantine and he's drinking from a little cup. And I really like when she's like, oh, hi. And then she's like just walking around and packing and she seems so carefree. She's like, I'm in my space. You don't have control here. And she says to him, drinking from a tiny cup doesn't make you intimidating. It just makes you rude.
Yeah.
I think that's so funny. Why is she like this?
And then he's like, what happened to your eye? And she says, I wanted it to match my jacket. Like, this girl cannot be serious for a moment.
She can't. And then he tells her very abruptly, I want you to get assessed again. Ooh, and she gets upset.
For a moment, she genuinely looks kind of worried and scared. Mm-hmm. But then she quickly goes back to being a little shit, which is amazing.
I really like, because he goes, London was. And then this whole time, she's like putting together a smoothie. Yeah. And as he says that, she turns on the smoothie and just stares at him and smiles.
Gives him that cute little smile.
Yeah, and he's like, London was. Loud smoothie noise. Horrible stare. And he's like, meant to look like suicide.
And she's like, it didn't?
Like, aghast. And then he goes on to be like, she slit her own throat. She's like, it happens. And then he goes on to be like, and four other people died. And she was like, slip of the hand.
She is so silly.
And it's really funny because she's really excited about her next job, but he like rips the postcard mm-hmm. away from where she has it sitting on her little like kitchenette area. And she's really upset. And I like the line she says, which is really strange and childish, but also super creepy given the context. And she's like, but this one has asthma. You know I like the breathy ones.
I love that.
That's so weird, it's but so I love weird. It.
Also, as a side note, do you feel like Villanelle's Russian accent is less distinct than in later seasons?
Definitely. It's not as deep, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think in the later seasons, it's a lot deeper.
It's like more pronounced.
Yeah, and I feel like in this one, sometimes I can hear kind of a little bit of Jodie Comer in there. She's mentioned this in interviews, but she's like, she was still kind of figuring out Villanelle for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I think this is kind of that journey of her figuring her out too, because we don't know who Villanelle is, and that's exciting. Then we lead into her asking if Jerome is going to be the one that does the assessment, and he's like yes, and then she actually gets assessed. Mm-hmm. Love this scene so much. I really like the moment when the guy talks to her in Russian and she does this little like, oh
yeah.
Constantine is the one that clarifies and says she won't speak Russian anymore, which I think is fascinating because we don't know why. And I think that adds more to the mystery of Villanelle.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I really like that it pans out because we just have a close-up of her face and then it pans out to show what she's actually wearing. And he says, thank you for putting in the effort, Villanelle. And it shows her in this, like, pink chiffon dress. It's so puffy and cute. She fixes it, and she's like, thank you.
It's so ridiculous.
She looks so cute, though. I love her little smile. I think I use this word for her often, but she's very cheeky. And then the questioning begins. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty much just asking her, like, how do you feel about the people that hire you? Do you want to know more about the people mm-hmm. that you're killing? And she's like, I respect their privacy.
Yeah.
And no, I don't care. Because she doesn't, and it's very clear.
And then he asks, have you been feeling any anxieties or stress lately? And she's like, I had quite a heavy period last week, but other than that, I think I'm okay.
Yeah. I really like that she doesn't dress up the word period. Like, mm-hmm. she just says it.
Yeah.
I think that's really nice, too.
I agree. Like, I know it's supposed to be a joke, and it is, and it's funny, but I appreciate seeing a woman on screen talking about her period in a very natural way.
Mm-hmm. And then he asks her about the kill that she just did in Bulgaria, and she's like, I shot him twice in the heart. I watched the spark drain from his eyes. And then they show her the weird pictures.
Yeah. So first it's a picture of, like, a hanged man. They ask, what do you see? And she's like, good legs.
Yeah. I really like that, because it's so silly. And then they show the hanged dog, which, like, personally, I think that would mess me up. Like, seeing that on screen, I'm like, oh no, puppy. Mm-hmm. And then she starts to heavy breathe and, like, tears are coming to her eyes. And this is a fake-ass villain, I'll mm-hmm. cry. She's trying to hold the facade that she's disturbed by this, but then she breaks. Like, she's just, like, laughing.
Yeah, she bursts out laughing, and she's like, aww.
Yeah. Kind of like, y'all really thought I cared.
Yeah. And so Jerome is like, she's fine. Yeah. But Constantine is like, hold up one sec, and pulls up some receipts.
Yeah.
And he pulls out this drawing that I assume Villanelle did. It looks like a woman, faceless woman, just kind of her hair. So we as an audience probably think, like, that kind of looks like Eve. Jerome asks if she's still dreaming about Anna.
And he notably asks her in Russian. He switches real quick.
That's really interesting. I didn't even catch that.
I think it's a power thing. Mm. I think it's a control piece because he's like, you're trying to control the situation and we've been bending to you by speaking in English. But we're going to switch real quick back to Russian and let you know we're very much so still in control.
Yeah. I love that. So he asks about Anna, which we as an audience don't know who Anna is at this point. So Villanelle looks very visibly uncomfortable and says that it's not Anna.
Yeah, and when she says it, she kind of, like, crosses over her fists, and mm-hmm. she, like, clenches them real tight.
Yeah.
And she is clearly upset.
Yes.
And I like how well that is conveyed with so few words.
Mm-hmm. She says it's her mother, but then she says that she's joking. She says my mother had really thin, shitty hair.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't really say who the drawing is. What I think is that she doesn't know who it is. It's faceless for a reason. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of this figure that she is searching for, probably stemming from those mommy issues.
Maybe. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. I think the way that I approached it was that I do think that it is actually Anna. Mm-hmm. And I think though she is faceless, I think that also has its impact. Though I think that what you're saying though could very much so be true as well. But I took it as, like, that is Anna, and she can't bring herself to admit that it is, because I think that's a giving up some control. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, her not drawing a face could also be her saying, like, I can't draw her face. All I can remember is her hair. Mm.
That's really interesting.
And the women that we've primarily have seen have been notably older than her, but also they all have really good hair.
Yeah. They have very similar hair.
Yeah.
So Jerome does not sign her off. Mm-hmm. And she gets very annoyed.
Oh, she's so pissed. I like what Constantine says, though, because it's very strange. And it's very much so, like, I have power in the situation. He says, we're doing you a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so upset. And he tells her too, he's like, it's good to have someone worried about you. And she's mm-hmm. like, and who worries about you? I do.
And he says, no, you don't.
He says it twice.
Mm-hmm. Which this, I feel like, kind of comes back, this energy in the finale of season 2.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. She, like, hugs him and stuff mm-hmm. to try to be like, I care about you, and hugs him to manipulate him emotionally. And she reaches into his pocket, grabs the postcard, and stuffs it under her little chiffon dress. As they lean back from the hug and they're kind of just staring at each other, he's like, and you wonder why I'm worried about you? Because it's like, you're not supposed to show this kind of human
yeah.
connection or desire for it. So, which means that he is, to some extent, falling in that moment for her manipulation.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't catch that she takes the postcard.
Yeah, I feel like that should have been a red flag for him.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you up to?
And then he says, do something normal. Which I think parallels when Bill tells Eve in the last episode not to do anything stupid in mm-hmm. regards to investigating this case and this woman.
And then we see Villanelle running on a treadmill and listening to the radio. And there's a woman on the radio that laughs like a dolphin, almost. And Villanelle just imitates her.
Like a dolphin.
It sounded like a dolphin. And so you kind of get this idea that this is kind of how she practices showing emotion.
Yeah, it's very surreal and not something I think I've ever seen on TV. Mm-hmm. But before that point, very creepy.
Then her doorbell rings and her instinct is to grab a knife to answer the door. But it's just straight boy Sebastian. He gives her arnica for the bruise. And then she just kind of asks him out, you know?
I did not know what arnica was. Mm-hmm. And I looked it up and you were really shocked. You were like, you don't know what arnica is? I understood that it was like a topical medicine. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know a bit more about what it was. And arnica is actually like a mild toxin. So that's really interesting, given where we know this episode is going, toxin-wise.
That is interesting.
It's a good little hint of what's coming. But yeah, she does ask him out. And I like, he's like, what do you want to do? And she says, something normal.
Yeah.
Which once again, red flags. Who says something normal? What, do you live an abnormal life?
So then it cuts to them having a little ice cream date. She's dressed in a like red and white dress, which I really like. Sunglasses on her head.
She looks so summery. Mm-hmm. I think she's adorable.
They're kind of just talking. She does her dolphin laugh.
Oh my god. Which I think, given the context that we got to see it before, makes it that much creepier that she's like, yes, a good chance for me to practice.
Yeah. So creepy. It really emphasizes the fact that this is all an act for her. She does not care about straight boy Sebastian.
No. I mean, we don't either, but it's still really funny to see her playing up this character.
Mm-hmm. And then they see like a band playing in like the Parker Plaza area, and he touches her back, and I felt very protective.
I did too. I have that in my notes because I was like, you don't touch her. You just met. Consent. Yeah. I was like, don't touch her. You don't have to guide her.
Yeah.
She is Villanelle. Don't touch her. I was very upset too.
It was a very tiny moment, but I was like, excuse me, sir? But yeah, so he asks, do you like music? And she says, I like national anthems.
And he laughs at her.
And she's like, why is that funny?
She's
like,
so confused.
I think she has a really strange sense of humor. Mm-hmm. When people laugh at the things she says that aren't supposed to be funny, she gets really defensive. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably ties back to things from her childhood that we're going to learn about later on.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then he starts to ask her more like personal questions, like, where did you come here from? Mm-hmm. And she immediately deflects the question right back to him. And he's quick to kind of talk about his own life. Mm-hmm. Oh, but then we have this gay ass moment. Oof. Oh, yes.
Another MILF alert.
Yes. And it's this woman who's a little bit older, and she just, her eyes just openly follow her. And I think it's great because Sebastian is clearly talking and he sees her just like lost, and she's transfixed. And the softness in her face and in her eyes as she stares after this woman, so good.
And then he's like, do you know her? And it's just kind of like the curse of the straights, of being so oblivious to the queerness of the world.
Right? And I really like where she says no. And the way she says it when she looks at him is so cold and detached and firm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's such a sharp contrast between how she looked at that woman. And then she immediately says, I want to see your apartment.
She was horny.
She's a horny. She saw a beautiful woman and she was like, I must now have sex.
So then it just kind of immediately cuts to his apartment, and they're just fucking.
It's just the whole room shaking.
Yeah. So she's on top of him, and she's, like, in full control. She looks very determined. Like, she's on a mission, you know? Mm-hmm. There's no really, like, pleasure in her face or anything. She's just like, I have a job to do, and I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. And it's really funny because it's completely soundless except for him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's out here, like, moaning and breathless and saying, like, please slow down. Like, I'm gonna come real quick. Like, all these things. And she does not listen. She is not consent friendly with this man.
Yes. I wrote that in my notes. I was like, ma'am, consent.
Yes.
This man wants to go slower.
Like, also, are you being careful? Because she's clearly the one that's in control in the situation.
Yeah. And then, you know, he finishes inside of her, I might add. And this man looks like he's about to cry. It looks like he's already in love with her, which, honestly, relatable.
Yeah. I think he is, honestly.
Yeah.
Or he believes he is.
And then he's like, did you? Like, did you come? And she's like, she kind of pauses and she's like, yes.
I don't know.
She did not.
I mean, it's very hard to read her, but personally, I don't think she did.
No, I don't think she did either.
Because if she did, that must have been the smallest thing in the world. I don't know.
I don't think she came.
She just doesn't look satisfied at all. You know? She looks very much so like, it's over, I guess.
Yeah. And then she puts her hand on his neck like she's going to choke him. And this boy, I feel like that's a really sad line when he's like, I'm never going to hurt you.
And it's like, you should be afraid, sir. And the way he, like, cradles her face, it makes her slacken her hold on his neck. Because I think it catches her off guard, the softness of it all. But yeah, it's very strange. And I can just feel the impending doom of this character, of this boy. And I'm like, oh, honey, you don't know who you are talking to. You don't know what you've gotten yourself into. Yes, she is gorgeous, but be careful. You are not Eve Pilastri. You are not ready for this woman. I just feel like she smiles down at him, too. And she's just like, you fool. So good.
Straight baby boy. So then it's the next morning and she leaves, says she's going to work. She looks very bored because I feel like she's like, well, normal things suck. Like, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
So she is kind of doing her walk of shame.
And then the song by Brigitte Bardot, Contact, plays in French overhead as she begins to prep for her next kill. It's very exciting.
And then we see her in her apartment in a robe with a mask on, which, you know, like pandemic vibes, you know? Yeah. And she's making this toxic perfume. She's creating the weapon that she's about to use.
I think I really like the sneak peek of all of that because I'm excited to see, like, oh, what is she going to do next? Hey, do you think it's a good time to take a break?
I think it's a perfect time to take a break because I need to pee. All right, we'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. This time we are with Eve and they're heading toward the new office. And she looks so excited.
She looks so happy. She sees Bill at the office door. She waves at him really excitedly. I think it's really interesting because it's the first time we see Eve be excited and happy about going to work.
It's true. And I really like when she walks up and Bill very much so is like, where the fuck are we, Eve? Yeah. And he even tells her, he's like, this is a little unusual.
Yeah.
Very much so, like, disbelieving what's happening.
And then Elena arrives as well, because she also quit her job. And Eve says, all I had to say was Carolyn Martin's.
Which is really so cute. It's also so gay. Elena's like, yes, powerful women, I follow the trail. I follow them. Which, honestly, same. I also really like that it's very hinting about what's about to happen in this scene. But Bill is very upset because the exchange between Eve and Elena makes it very clear that Eve asked Elena first, not Bill. And Bill's like, you asked her first? He's very butthurt by this.
I agree. And like you said, he kind of carries that energy throughout the rest of the scene.
Yeah, you can tell that he's on edge, and there's kind of this tension that builds up in the scene really well, I think.
Yeah. But
very much so hints at the power dynamic that has been in place between Eve and Bill.
So they go inside, and Eve goes through the cases that she's compiled and explains why she thinks that, that all the assassinations were committed by women, specifically one woman. And Bill is very suspicious throughout this whole time. He's very much so playing the devil's advocate, which is gross. He's very much so being a man about all this, which, I don't know. I love Bill, but I do not love Bill in this scene.
Yeah, he's a lot more old school, and that very much so shows. And old school mentality, which, honestly, this show is a lot more progressive. So to see that at play, it's really interesting.
Yeah, so he keeps asking questions, not really believing it's the same woman. And Eve says, why don't you want to believe they're all the same woman? And he replies, you can't lead a team with assumptions. It's not how it's done. I think this shows two things. One is that Bill is not used to not being the boss, having trouble letting go of that control.
Absolutely.
Like, who's in charge? And I also think the fact that he says assumptions shows that he doesn't really understand intuition, or might not have a lot of intuition. He's thinking very logically, while Eve is very much so like, I have this intuition, I have this feeling that they're the same woman. And she's right.
I think what's really interesting is this entire time as he's playing the devil's advocate, which I hate that term, but truly is what he's doing. He keeps poking at the femininity of it all. And especially when he says things like, so witnesses saw a woman wearing a dress and playing with a child. Very suspicious. Very much so undermining Eve and what she's saying. Once again, poking at the fact, like, you're just assuming these things when it's very common for women to do this. And it's like, well, it's very uncommon that the woman was wearing the wife's dress and that the child was with that woman right before he was murdered. Like, I feel like he's very glaringly looking over those aspects of it. And then Eve says, we have to follow through with our theories. And he comments back, you know, loosely hanging together all of your theories with a pretty ribbon. And I feel like that pretty ribbon piece, it adds a feminine touch to it. And it's undermining the femininity of her being in charge as a woman.
I agree. 100%. And then after he says all these things, there's like this really weird, awkward silence. And she kind of has to excuse herself, which I think is really shitty to embarrass her in front of everybody like that.
Yeah. Elena gives him a look too.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? I like that Elena's the one that does it. Kind of like, what the fuck, dude? Like, let her do her thing. And Bill has told Eve before too, you're brilliant. And it's true. But he's struggling to let go of that power.
And so this is when Eve goes to the restroom. room, and Kenny follows with a little roll of toilet paper and asks her how many sheets she's gonna need. And she's like, I'm just gonna take the roll and bring it back afterwards.
Which is so funny.
It's so silly.
I feel like it really shows how awkward Kenny is, mm-hmm. and endears me to him so much more.
And I like that this little scene gets a little throwback scene in season 3 with the toilet paper emoji. Yeah. It's really precious. So she's in the bathroom taking a moment to herself, and then she looks in the mirror and she lets her hair down. Which...
She wore it down.
She wore it down, baby. And so in this process, she gets transported back to the scene that we saw in the previous episode where she first meets Villanelle. And so she's kind of is reminded of that interaction. Mm-hmm. And so she realizes that that nurse, quote unquote, that she saw in the bathroom could be a lead into the case.
Yeah, because she didn't see her body lying on the floor. Mm-hmm. I feel like she would have remembered that. Yeah. I feel like Eve probably remembered every single person on that floor that was lying around dead. Because mm-hmm. that's such a haunting image and probably not when she can get out of her head. One thing I really like in that mirror scene too, when she does let her hair down, remember, because in that scene, Villanelle is to her left and she's to the right. Mm-hmm. And when she put her hair up, she had looked to the left. And in that moment, when she's looking in the mirror, she looks to the left. It's almost like she's literally trying to conjure up that moment again. Like, she's conjuring Villanelle and she's painting that picture. And I'm like, I can see her and I can see what she's doing.
That's hot.
That's good acting too. But yes, it's also very hot.
I know last episode we talked about which wrist the watch is on. Mm-hmm. She has hers on her left wrist. Mm-hmm. So she's, you know, not a sociopath or psychopath yet.
Yet.
But when she looks in the mirror, and I know this is a stretch, but in the mirror, the watch is on her reflection's right wrist.
Oh.
What does it mean?
What does it all mean?
What does it all mean? I've connected the dots.
Okay, so Eve comes back into the office and she's had this epiphany and she's really charged up with it and her hair is notably down because I feel like once Eve gets into this momentumous fury rolling moment, she's like, I need to keep going, and she just lets her hair down. I think Eve is really excited and she's actively thinking about the possibility of this possible lead. And I like as she's doing this, she's like, where's Bill? Mm-hmm. And Elena just turns around very Elena-like. Mm-hmm. She says, he left in a sulk.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate that she adds in the sulk part. Like, he's clearly butthurt.
Yeah.
I love that it's very clear that everyone in the room saw it and felt it. And it's addressed.
And so Eve goes out to go look for him. She finds him and then she's like, oi! Which again is her just using like British slang, which I think is really cute.
It's very cute. One thing that Eve says that I really like, she's very much so like, we're going to talk about this because I'm Eve and I'm really direct. And like, this is the best I felt in years. She says, I have backed you for over 10 years. Now I'm asking you to see it from my perspective for 5 minutes and you literally run away. And I'm just like, yes, Eve, call him out. Tell him he's being a man who doesn't know how to back off for a minute and like respect that a woman can be in charge in this moment and be probably more knowledgeable than him. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Specifically, she calls him a monkey dick.
She does.
Which is something I will now be using in my day-to-day.
Oh my god, I love that. She's like, I thought you were being a monkey dick for not being the boss. And then he says that great line where he's like, I'm sorry, I'm adapting. Mm-hmm. Which I feel like is good. It's an admission, but the best apology is change behavior. Mm-hmm. So Bill, change your behavior.
So they keep walking around looking for chocolate, talking about the cases, and Eve is saying, like, you know, we need to focus on finding this assassin and all these things, and Bill's very much so like, we need to focus on who she's working for.
Yeah. He's like, the them, who's the them of it all?
Yeah.
And Eve does a really good job of explaining her reasoning of why, and she's like, because she's the only person we know connecting to them.
I also think, though, part of her is driven by this obsession that's been festering inside of her for so long, and it's finally this outlet and this excuse to really just go at it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think at the end of the day that Eve is passionate about finding justice and saving lives.
No.
I think she's passionate about female assassins.
Which, same.
Which is very gay of her.
Which I support. I think one thing that Bill says that really stuck with me and I think pokes and prods at Eve is Bill says she's irrelevant. And immediately Eve comes back and says she's completely relevant. We have to consider her motive. Mm-hmm. And I love that. She's like, no. Let me tell you right now. She is everything to this investigation for her. And I love that. I'm like, yes, validate your girl. Validate that she's important.
And I think even now, before she even truly knows Villanelle, Eve is humanizing her.
Very much so.
Like, I think everyone around her sort of sees Villanelle as this tool, as this thing in between them and, you know, this organization. Mm-hmm. But But Eva's like, but what about her? What made her this way? What is she getting out of this? Like, are they lavishing her? Are they giving her money? Like, who is this person?
Yeah, I think the word that Bill uses specifically to describe Villanelle is she's the lackey, which I feel like is such a gross way to describe her position. Once again, undermines Villanelle. But Eve's like, no, 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 we have to consider her extremely dangerous. Also, mm-hmm. she's a woman. She hides so well. And she knows this because mm-hmm. Eve, as a woman, is like, it's so easy to be ignored. I really like when Eve goes on to explain who she thinks Villanelle is. Mm-hmm. Bill kind of is like relenting. He's being less of a hard ass about it. Or not even
less of a monkey dick.
Less. Bill is being less of a monkey dick about it. I like that Eve goes on to describe who she thinks Villanelle is. And she mm-hmm. says she's young, smart, fit. She must speak multiple languages. And she certainly has a flair for her kills. And then she says, I'd say she scores high on the psychopathy scale. Mm-hmm. One thing I really like is as Eve describes Villanelle, it feels like something she's very familiar with. She says she's young, smart, she's fit, probably speaks multiple languages, and has a certain flair to her kills. And I think the flair part is a really important thing to add in for Eve, because I think that's what really draws her in. And Bill even affirms that he's like, Hairpin was cool. Mm-hmm. And I think Eve's like, yes, it was really cool. I mean, I think back to episode one when they're sitting and they talk about the femoral artery of Kedrin, who, mm-hmm. you know, got sliced, and Eve's little cool that rushed out in the meeting, mm-hmm. which was so awkward, and but so, like, insightful for her character. But,
yeah. I agree. Also, all of these descriptions are spot on.
Very, but she's barely started really this team-led mm-hmm. investigation, but it's so ingrained. She already knows who she is, and that's so exciting. So right before Eve leaves, she turns to him and says, get me something with nuts in it. And I really like it because Bill turns around and says, yes, boss.
Yeah, that's really cute.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way of resolving that conflict.
I agree.
And seeing a transition of power. Mm-hmm. In a very, like, amicable transition.
I 100%
well.
Agree. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so Eve does go back to the office, and she asks Kenny to look for medical and prison records for, she says, any young woman who has been detained, hospitalized, or whispered about displaying violent or psychopathic tendencies between the ages of 16 and 45.
Yes. And I really like it because she's like, how far is your reach? And he's mm-hmm. like, no wall, I can't climb. Yeah. But then when he asks, like, from where? And she's like, the world? And he's like, that's impossible.
And then Elena is like, what, wall too high?
I love that. It's so flirty, but also challenging. Mm-hmm. And I really like it because Elena is very bold about it. And it feels so good to hear her say it and be like, you say you can climb any wall, do it. Like,
yeah. But then Eve turns around and asks her to ask Frank out for a drink.
Oh my God. I really like how Eve delegates out real mm-hmm. quick. She's such a born leader. I freaking love it. And she has such the drive and the passion for mm-hmm. it. I really like it too because Eve says, in regards to the CTV, I just want to get a look at her. Oh, yes, you do, ma'am. Sorry.
All right. So then we transition over back to Villanelle, who's in her apartment. She's going through her closet. You can see all of her different disguises. I will say she is eating an apple, which I feel like is a nod to just Eve. Not, you know, obviously she's maybe not thinking about her actively, but it's mm-hmm. the show's way of being like, Eve.
Temptation. Oh my God, she's the snake. She's the devil, but also, yes. Sorry. I love
she's
her so
the
much.
Devil. I'm ready to sin. Just kidding. I'm always ready to sin.
Oh my God, stop it. Okay. I really like when she picks up the little outfit she's going to wear mm-hmm. and she says, Bonjour, Claudie. Because once again, she names them.
Yeah, she names these characters.
And it's such a cute little server's outfit. Mm-hmm. She's wearing a brown wig again. I assume one that's very similar to like the very first time we saw her, but it has like the straight bangs and it's slightly curled. Mm-hmm. I really like that she glides in very smoothly to wherever she's going for her job. And the guy even asks her, he's like, are you new? And she's like, no. Yeah. Very confident. And I'm like, wow, like, how does she just do that? It's so good.
It's like one of those things where if you're confident enough, anyone will believe you.
Yeah. I think she moves on very quickly because I think anytime you walk with purpose and once again that confidence, you can move anywhere where you
I agree.
Need to be.
And so this is like some sort of like charity event for yeah. some very rich people. Mm-hmm. Whoever the presenter is, she's sort of talking about Carla, who is this perfumist, I will mm-hmm. say. I don't really know what the official title is.
I don't either.
But she's essentially a really big donor of this, yeah. this charity event. And so she describes her as being a feminist and a heroine.
Yeah, which I think is interesting that that's Villanelle's target this time. Mm-hmm. You can very much so tell that Villanelle is casing and looking for an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then when Carla does leave, Villanelle's quick to follow. Mm-hmm. And I really like that as she's descending the stairs. I mean, I don't like it because a man yells at her. And he tells her, he says, hey, no staff down there. You should know that. And I visibly rolled my eyes because I'm like, mm-hmm. why are you yelling, sir? And I love when she pulls out the tampon. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And she says, Madame asked me to bring her a tampon. And then she's like, I never go anywhere without one.
And I think that because he's a man, it makes him really uncomfortable. He's like, I don't want to talk about tampons. Just do whatever you have to do.
Yeah, he's like, very well. He's like, yeah. Go ahead, move along. I really like when Villanelle makes men uncomfortable. I think it's one of my favorite things because I think we're used to seeing men in power. But I think in these really small ways, she takes control of situations. Mm. And I think it's a sign of her ability to manipulate very, very easily. And what is fascinating is she's often using her femininity to do it. And I really like that because once again, it's power in femininity. And I love it.
I dig that.
I do too. And then she actually is going in for Carla. And she's very much so looking for an opportunity, mm-hmm. although it doesn't look like she really has a plan necessarily, like mapped out, mm-hmm. which I think is really fascinating. There's a lot of flexibility and a lot of adaptability that has to come with that.
So she walks up to her when she's alone, and she essentially says that she's a big fan of hers, that she also wants to kind of make it in the perfume industry.
Yeah.
Carla's very dismissive.
Yeah, which is very strange.
I think it kind of shows that, yes, she was described as a feminist and a heroine, but she is a meanie. You can tell that, like, the money or fame or whatever kind of got to her head, and she's not really in it for the charity of it all.
Yeah, there's definitely a divide in classism, for mm-hmm. sure.
But Villanelle, being the manipulative little goddess that she is, she turns back around and she uses the fact that she was described as a feminist and a heroine to say, it's women like you who paved the way for women like me. I even named the perfume after you.
Yeah, she's stroking this woman's ego. Yeah. I think this woman thinks that she's like the shit.
Yeah.
She even says, like, I know how hard you worked and it inspired me. And I feel like she's also doing that thing where she's testing this woman and asking her, like, as a feminist, do you support other women? Like, do you truly do mm-hmm. it? And putting her on the spot. And I think that is another thing. This woman who's probably egocentric, she's probably very competitive as well. Mm-hmm. So it's competing with her in that small way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And so Carla agrees to just smell the perfume. And it's really funny. I think Villanelle hands Carla the perfume and then she like immediately steps away.
And like covers her mouth.
Yeah, it really reminded me of when like you're at the doctor and you're getting x-rays and the doctor's like, it's completely harmless. And then they step into another room that like, completely seals off to push a button.
And they like put on a coat or something and they're like, all right, you're good. I think it's really interesting, too, that Villanelle doesn't spray it on the woman. She lets the woman spray it on herself.
Yes, it's so powerful.
She's like, I'm just going to let you kill yourself unknowingly. There's something in that that's really psychotic and mm-hmm. really fucked up.
You can see the anticipation in her eyes. Like, she's so excited.
Yeah, and it's so creepy. And, like, she looks giddy, like a little kid in the candy shop. Like, she's, like, watching or, like... She looks a little kid on Christmas Day, and she knows that, like, she's getting something good. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she sprays it on her wrist. She smells it. She begins to kind of choke / cough. And then she kind of is asking for help, you know, for Villanelle mm-hmm. to help her. But she just watches and just smiles and just observes and is having a great time.
There's this really creepy moment, too, when all of that's happening. When the woman first starts choking from the perfume or the poison of the perfume, there's a mirror to her right. And you can see Villanelle in it just, like, giddily laughing, like, so excited. And I think the two images right next to each other, as the woman is desperately asking for help, makes the cruelty of the situation that more intense. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really good kill in that sense. This kill is not one of my favorites. I think mm-hmm. just the creepiness of it. But I think the most psychopathic thing she does is when she sits down on the little stool and she reaches down for the woman's hand. And I thought she was going to initially, when I first ever saw the scene, I thought she was going to check her pulse. Did you think that?
No, but that's a reasonable thing to do, but she's not very reasonable.
No.
She's not good at checking.
No, but she like reaches down and she like does a little lady's hand and she goes, bye-bye.
Yeah.
And that's so
creepy.
Weird. Yeah. So creepy, but also I love her, so it's okay. But also Villanelle, that's scary.
So I think it is time to rank that kill. So again, with rank that kill, we discuss and break down a Villanelle kill. So we talk about her fashion, persona, weapon of choice, flair, and most importantly, the psychopathy of it all. So let's just go ahead and dive in.
Yeah.
Yeah? All right, so let's talk about fashion. So she's wearing the catering uniform, right? So it's a white shirt, black tie, black pants, ugly-ass brown wig. What are your thoughts?
I really like the outfit that mm-hmm. she wears. I think she could have worn better shoes, but I think it makes sense because she's a server. Mm-hmm. The wig, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't think I like Villanelle with bangs.
You know, yes, I don't like Villanelle with bangs, but I like Jodie Comer with bangs.
There's a difference, though. There's a difference. Okay, that's a whole different like podcast episode where we just gush. But what do you give the fashion for this one?
I am not a huge fan. I think it also, because it's a uniform, I feel like she was very limited in what she could really add to it. Mm-hmm. I hate the wig. I just really don't like it. So overall, I give it a 5 out of 10.
Fascinating. Okay, so for the fashion, I did like the little outfit. I thought it was super cute. Mm-hmm. I think she just wears it really well. I think she looks super cute. And I love a tie on Villanelle. It's like borderline heading toward a suit, but it's not. I'm not a huge fan of the wig. I don't hate it. I think it's the bangs that kill it for me. Yeah. But I do give this a 6.5.
Okay.
All right.
Next, Persona. What are your thoughts on Persona?
I think this is the first time we really get to see Villanelle fully in a role. Mm-hmm. Like, she takes on the persona of a server. She's very, like, docile about things. I mean, she's still very confident in how she walks in and shows that she's busy and she's on a job. But I like that she does don a full disguise.
I agree. I love that, you know, we know that she named her persona Claudie.
Which is so cute. Yeah. Oh.
She speaks French throughout. She is, you know, dressed as a caterer. She has the wig, the uniform. She actually does the work. Like, she's going around filling people's glasses. Mm-hmm. And even, like, the whole, like, little tampon bit I thought was really cute. And when she's talking to Carla, like, having this whole backstory of my passion is, like, being part of the perfume industry and all these things. And it got to a point even when Carla, like, was really mean to her that I felt protective of her. And I'm like, why do I feel protective of a character that isn't real?
Yeah, because she sells it so well. Yeah. I think, yeah, that's a really good way to put it. So what do you give this persona?
I give it 8 out of 10.
I do too. I give it an 8. No points. Just 8. Just 8. Just solid. Okay, that's really funny.
All right. And so Flair. What do you think about the Flair?
She does a really good job with this. Mm-hmm. Once again, I think it's tied back to her persona. I think the perfume is a really good touch. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that the woman is someone who started with her own perfume, mm-hmm. and that's how she became famous and probably how she makes most of her money, I think it's really impactful that that's what Villanelle decides to use to kill her.
I agree. I think I also like, kind of like you said, that she's not really the one that kills her. She lets Carla kill herself.
Yeah. Which I think is the most egotistical thing that this woman could do. It's mm-hmm. like, she takes control and she's like, I'm gonna kill myself. Mm. Even though, I mean, she doesn't know that she is, of course, but mm-hmm. Villanelle's like, no, you can do it.
Yeah. I really like the flair of this one.
Yeah. What do you give it?
And the fact that she went through the trouble of, like, creating this perfume and everything. I love it. I give it an 8.5.
Ooh. Okay, for this one, I'm actually gonna raise it, because from what I initially had written down, I'm actually gonna give it an 8.2. Because I do think that the perfume was a really, really smart choice. All right. Weapon of choice?
So weapon of choice, obviously the perfume. I love it. I think it's super original. It's super creative. The fact that she literally made it with her own hands is really impressive.
Yes. I love that she mixes it. Like, she knows toxicology.
Yeah. She's out here. STEM representation, am I right?
She would have been a STEM major.
Yeah, like, women in STEM. I rate it the highest.
Oh, what'd you rate it?
A 9.5.
Oh, that's really good. I think the way that the woman dies, and I think because of the weapon, the perfume of it all, I think this is the scariest one, mm-hmm. which is a really dumb reason to rate it lower, but I give it only a 7.8. Of all the weapons she uses, I think the hairpin still is the highest for me. Mm-hmm. But this one, I think, is creepier.
And then finally, psychopathy. So obviously, you know, she's very excited to see her die, but I think that part we've already seen before. Mm-hmm. We know that she likes watching people die. Yeah. I think there is that added element of this woman is literally reaching out to you, asking for help, and you mm-hmm. just laugh in her face. And then the whole, like, bye-bye thing at the end was really creepy. But overall, I give it a 6 out of 10.
For the psychopathy of it all, I do give it an 8.2.
Oh, wow.
I think the cruelty of it is unmatched from what we've seen so far.
I think that's very fair.
I think it really gave me a deep insight. And I think the moment when they do juxtapose the woman who is reaching out for help and then Villanelle in the mirror just laughing at her, mm-hmm. just giddy with excitement as this woman crumbles before her, is so jarring. It shocks me to my core. So what is your overall score for this kill?
My overall score for this kill is 6.2.
Fascinating. Mine is 7.7.
Oh, wow. It's very
high. So I ranked it really high. I think this kill was really interesting. I think what really sells it for me is just the overall psychopathy of it.
So updating our bye-bye boards, I still have Hairpin as number 1, mm-hmm. Bulgaria kill is number 2, and then this one falls for number 3.
And then for me, currently, I'm sitting hairpin kill number one. This is, I'm calling this the breathy kill, is sitting at number two, and then the Bulgaria kill is number three. So keep an eye out for our bye-bye boards. We'll update those with each episode we put out.
Let us know how you would rank them.
Yeah. So next, we move into the scene where they're in London at a bar with Frank. Ugh. I hate Frank.
You really do. I mean, same.
He's so gross.
Yeah, and drunk Frank is even grosser.
Because he's a mean drunk. Like, yeah. He's an angry drunk.
You know, he's there with Elena. Even Bill, quote-unquote, run into him. They start asking him questions about the case and, like, did you actually see the CCTV and all these things. It's really funny because he's like, what CCTV? And Elena's like, yeah, what CCTV? Like, and,
like, Eve gives Elena a look. Like, she pulls a face with her. Yeah. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, you're with us.
Yeah.
But Elena's out here like, I'm a spy.
Yeah. Like, she's like, I'm taking my job very seriously.
Yeah. I really like it because before they even start doing the line of questioning, Frank's like, this is very uncomfortable. And it's like, Frank, you're such a loser.
And then he pulls out the dead wife card.
I mean, it is very sad that his wife died. I don't want to underplay that because that is very sad.
It is sad, but nobody cares because he is a dick swab.
Yeah, and I think because he, probably long before his wife died, he has always treated people poorly. He's clearly not the most intelligent man in the room, and he knows it. I feel like he's one of those people that is quick to blame others.
100%.
And be like, it's not my fault, and deflect so that he's in the clear, which I think happened in the last episode. So I very much so don't like him.
I mean, it's sad that his wife died. I feel sad for his wife and for his kid, but I don't feel anything for Frank.
I don't. I really like when Elena is very clear with him. She was like, just so we're clear, I wasn't asking you out. And she reaffirms this like five times, which I really appreciate that she emphasizes this point with him. And he's devastated. But I also like that she never backs down and never like coddles to like this weak man.
I agree.
I really appreciate it.
So then Frank finally admits that he made up the CCTV. He's such an asshole about this. They ask him, like, why did you make it up?
And he says, because it was not your investigation. And he's specifically pointing at Eve when he says this. And he says, I was just sick of you piping up with your theories anytime there was a sniff of conspiracy in the air. And he's a total fucking asshole about it.
He calls her, you tiresome think bucket.
The worst comeback.
And it's just like this man enraged at a woman for having the audacity to experience critical thought.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
He's such an asshole. I love Eve's little face, like, that she pulls when he calls her a tiresome think bucket, because I feel like she has that line of thought, like, you're upset because I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. I love Eve so much.
They tell Frank to chill the fuck out, and he's like, all right, whatever, I have to go pick up my kids, when he's clearly drunk. Elena's like, let me just call you a cab, dude.
Yeah.
And as they're walking away, Elena turns around and says, what you both did today was massively insensitive.
Yeah.
And then she mouths, that was fun. Like,
yeah, she's behind so his cute. Back, little thumbs up.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate, because once again, I feel like Elena easily slipped into this character, and I loved it so much.
And then we move into the next scene, which is later that night, which is at Eve's house. Eve is talking to Nico. He asks about her day. She lies. She says, like, you know, I just did some yoga, tidied the office. But he notices that she's in a really good mood and kind of asks about it, and she can't contain it. Like, she is so giddy about it. She's like, I'm working for MI6.
Yeah. He even tells her, he says, you're sort of glowing.
Yeah.
And I think that's truly how Eve feels. I feel like she is glowing in all of these scenes. She's so happy.
I agree. After she says that she's working for MI6 now, he says, sounds dangerous. And in the most exhilarated way possible, she's like, I know.
Yeah, she's so breathless about it. And I love it. I'm like, yes, Eve, you're so happy. I live for Eve to be happy in these moments.
And, you know, Nico is like, are you sure you want to do this? And Eve is like, yes, she's killing people. Kind of like, I want to save the day. But Nico sees right through it.
Yeah, he says, and that's why you want to do it?
Like, is that really?
He reads through it so quickly. And once again, because I think they're best friends.
But Eve shuts that down real quick. She's like, you look exhausted. Why don't you go to bed?
Yeah, I feel like it's very much her saying, like, don't kill my mood, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to be happy. I want to, like, drink my wine.
I also think there was a hint of judgment in Nico when he's like, is that really why you want to do it?
Yeah, which I think is honestly Nico's downward spiral of him as a character, because I grew to really dislike him from this point on.
This is the start of the demise of their marriage.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that he says to her before he leaves fully is he says, don't stay up too late, which I feel like is very parenting of him.
Kind of like last episode when he was like, Ben.
Yeah, this is not a great scene for Nico at all. I'm not sure if he really has any great scenes after this point ever.
So then the next scene is back at Villanelle's apartment in Paris. So we see her get home from her kill.
She's wigless, thank God.
She is wigless, thank God. And Constantine comes in right behind her. He immediately, like, pushes her against the wall and starts choking her. Again, I feel very protective.
I do, too. I'm like, she's so small. Like, yeah, be nice to her.
Yeah, she's a baby.
She is a baby.
Also, her, an international assassin.
And he tells her, he's like, I'm halving your allowance. And she says, I wouldn't recommend that, as she's being choked.
Yeah.
Like, she's in no position to say that, mm-hmm. clearly. But she's like, I can still get out of this hold real mm-hmm. quick and change the dynamic that we have yeah. going on. He says, you disobeyed me. And I think, once again, the word allowance and disobeyed feels like a father talking to his child. Mm-hmm. And being like, I'm having your allowance. That very much so feels like a dad.
100%.
And then there's a knock at the door. And this, like, poor baby boy walks in. Sebastian.
Mm-hmm. And Constantine is like, I'm her brother. And what does Villanelle say? He has a condition.
A head ass. And he can't, like, counter her in any yeah. way. Because they're in such a weird position. She's such a punk.
And so then Sebastian asked her about her job. And he asked her if her boss liked the perfume. She says she loved it.
With, like, twinkling eyes. Yeah. She's like, she loved it.
Yeah. Sebastian says he wants to smell it, and V kind of hesitates, and then Sebastian swoops in and says to Constantine that her boss was being a total bastard.
This is the first time we get a full Constantine laugh.
I think it's a glimpse. I don't think it's a full-on, like, hearty Constantine laugh.
I'll give you that. I think that's very fair. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And so then Constantine is like, shall I come back later? And then stares at Sebastian until Sebastian's like, oh, shall I come back later?
And he's like, yes.
Yeah. And then Villanelle hugs Sebastian. He gives her a little, like, USB with national anthems and is like, are you sure it's okay if I leave? Are you safe?
Like, he's checking in with her to make sure, which I do like that, because he's seen her with that black eye before, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know the context mm-hmm. of that.
I like Sebastian. He would have made a really cute boyfriend to somebody.
Yeah, not her, but yeah.
No, not her.
I really like that Villanelle gives Sebastian such a genuine thank you, mm-hmm. because I don't think she's used to just getting gifts like that that mm-hmm. are so homemade and personal.
Yeah.
And show that, like, someone listened to what she talked about. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of her relationships, besides the one with Constantine, of course, are very short-term.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Or there's very much so, like, an exchange that happens. Like, I do something for you, and then you give me something. Like, you give me money if I go kill for you.
Yeah.
But Sebastian was very much so, like, this is for you, and no strings attached. It's just because I like you.
Yeah. I like the joy that is reflected in her eyes. It feels very genuine.
Mm-hmm. And then Sebastian takes the perfume from Villanelle's bag.
Oh, baby. I mean, we knew it was gonna, like, he was gonna die at some point.
Yeah.
I think it makes me so sad to know how he is going to die.
Yeah, especially because we just saw Carla die a really, like, horrific death, and yeah. then you have this little baby boy
who clearly has dreams, aspiration, mm-hmm. passion.
And so we see Villanelle and Constantine move into the next room, and he just says, you need to deal with him. And she says, he's my boyfriend.
And he's like, congratulations, he has yeah. kind eyes. And I think yeah. that's really sweet.
I agree. And then in this moment, Villanelle puts her legs on Constantine and, like, has, like, her arm over him. And I think this is the first time, besides, you know, the whole allowance, that we see this dad-daughter energy from them. Mm-hmm. Even if it is a very tense moment, they still have this dynamic. And I think that I really enjoy that the physical intimacy of the scene is, like, 0% sexual.
Yes, I was gonna say the same thing. I think that's a really good thing to bring up. I do not ever, ever, ever feel that sexual energy between mm-hmm. them. It's always so familial.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I really, really appreciate it. And I think it's something that I crave for Villanelle to have for so long.
I agree. And I think that's brilliant writing. It's brilliant directing. It's brilliant acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just also so refreshing, mm-hmm. you know, to see a man and a woman being able to physically touch without it having, like, these sexual, like, connotations.
Yeah. And I think it's very easy to write it that way. And the fact that it wasn't, I think, is really, really important for this entire show. I think their interaction on the couch is really interesting
mm-hmm.
because though she is placing her arm around the couch, and she's got her legs up and seems like her defenses are down,
mm-hmm.
she's very much so still in control of how she's placing her body.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he says, you have to trust me. She does this really cute little giggle. And then she says, no, you have to trust me. As she pulls out a knife with her mm-hmm. left hand and puts it under his throat.
And then he pulls a knife on her. And she says, okay, we can fight, girl. I audibly moaned.
You did.
Something about it. I can't even explain, but something about the way she says that.
Oh my god, there's a slight rasp to it. And a little, like, giddiness to it. Like, oh, we can fight. Oh my god.
It's like top meat, you know?
Oh my god, but it's true. It's so good. But then she goes on to say, but you will get tired and I will get bored. And you don't like it when I get bored. Oh my mm-hmm. God. She's the unthinkable thing she could mm-hmm. do. And you know that she's probably had like a mini plan in her head.
Oh, for sure.
And she would have such a joy killing him probably. Because it would be, once again, I think her whole thing is control. We've mm-hmm. already seen that in these past like two episodes.
And then she says, if I kill you, they will just send me another one. And I think it's really interesting that she doesn't just say they'll send another one, but they'll send me another one. Yeah. She's very much so self-centered.
Definitely.
And like just thinks about herself.
Yeah, like for her, she's the center of his life. That's mm-hmm. how she views him as well.
Mm-hmm. Like he is an accessory to her.
That's a really good way to put it.
So then he says, I thought you worried about me. And she just shrugs at him.
Yeah, like, I worry about you when it's convenient for me.
Yeah, exactly. And then he just says, you're so dramatic. Which is very
true. Which is so true.
But I think at this point, the Villanelle ultimately wants to know why he lied about the security. Like why he wants her to kind of play it like, subtle or be on the down low.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And so she says the words, tell me, which is really interesting to me because I saw online, you know, after the season 3 finale with the song Tell Me plays, people were wondering, do Eve and Villanelle ever say those words like throughout the series? And it turns out, you know, Villanelle does at this point.
You're right.
And the point that she's saying it, she says, tell me right before she's about to learn who Eve Pilastri is.
Oh my God. That's such a good connection.
Because right after she says, tell me, Constantine says, a woman in London is leading a department just to find you. And she just lights up.
Yeah, because the ultimate adversary. Mm-hmm. The ultimate game, right? The
she person that could so like excited. Undo her.
Yeah, definitely. And he's like, you have to be subtle. And she's like, I can be subtle. And in that moment, she asks, like, what's her name? Mm. And he's like, why? And she's like kind of shrugged her shoulder, like, I just kind of want to know. And he's like, Eve Pilastri. And this is the very, very first time we hear Villanelle say Eve Pilastri. And that is so exciting. Oof.
Anyway, Constantine just tells her, like, she needs to always be aware or whatever. And she's like, I'm always aware. And then we hear the song thud.
And it's very clearly, like, a human-sized thud. And we just know. We just know it's our boy Sebastian.
It is.
And they both look up like, huh? Like, what happened?
And they go find him. He's dead. And she's, like, dealt with.
The way she just shrugs, too. Like, he was gonna die anyways. Yeah. And that's really sad. And Constantine immediately just looks so annoyed. Like a dad. And he's like, I have to clean this up. And he pulls out his phone like he's gonna make a call. And, like, do you call in that moment? Yeah. Who does he call?
And so then it cuts to later that same night. Villanelle is in bed listening to the USB that Sebastian left. And she's just looking up Eve Pilastri on Bing, which who uses Bing?
I know, I got that too. I was like, girl, you are a psychopath. Like, first of all, you wear your watch on your right wrist.
You're using Bing.
What's next? But yeah, so she's using Bing and she types in Eve Pilastri. And like, she immediately goes to images, which I think is really funny. And it's just old women.
Yeah, named Eve Pilastri, I guess.
It's so funny.
And then we see simultaneously that Eve is in the office late at night. She is staying up late, not listening to Nico.
Mm-hmm.
And she is looking at the pictures of the nurses from the hospital, right as V is looking at these old ladies.
Yeah, and I think it's really exciting that we have the back and forth of the two of them. And exactly, I imagine it's like what they're doing right then.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're colliding to each other. Like we can feel the beginning of a pool. Mm-hmm. And that is so exciting. And I love their different reactions. Actions as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Villanelle does find that picture. She clicks on it and she finds a picture of them. It looks like at the Bridge Club.
Mm-hmm.
And she zooms in on Eve next to Nico.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks horrified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so exciting.
It's really interesting. I think that they both kind of have that same realization of like, oh, this is a lady from the restroom at the same exact time.
Mm-hmm.
And they both just go into their own little gay panics.
They do. They gay panic.
They do.
I think the fact that Villanelle responds to show that she's scared or a little frightened is really exciting because I think it unbalances her, it catches her off guard, and I think that's really interesting because so far we've seen her in nothing but control.
Mm.
And I really love it.
Oof.
Eve unbalances her.
Oof.
Okay, sorry.
And then we see Bill coming into the office. He also couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits next to Eve, and Eve turns to him and says, I think I've met her.
And she's got her hands up in her hair, too, as she, like, leans back. And she's just smiling. She looks so excited because the possibility of, I've crossed paths with this woman, and I didn't die, I think, first and foremost. But also the exhilaration of, we were hairs away from each other. And that is so intoxicating to Eve. And I think as a viewer, I am also so excited that Eve just knows. And once again, it points at Eve's really strong intuition.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It's so strong. And I'm so excited to see where it leads her in the next few episodes.
And so that's the episode. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a really exciting episode because I think it's the beginning of the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think last episode was a lot of setup, which was still very good insightful. But this is kind of propelling us into the plot for this season.
Yeah, and it makes me feel so excited.
I agree.
Because I know what's going to come, like, as a fan of the show, but it still, like, it leaves me with the sense of, like, oh, I'm so excited to go on this journey and this ride again.
I agree. Great episode overall, I think.
I agree.
We done did it.
We done did it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Wear It Down, the Queer Killing Eve podcast. We post new episodes every Sunday at noon central. Please be sure to share this podcast with a friend and leave us a review so we can keep growing.
You can follow us on social media, on Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram at Wear It Down Pod. Email us if you have any questions or comments, or if you just want to say hi at wearitdownpod@gmail.com. Bye.
Bye.